This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, welcome back once again. Oh yeah, Decibel Geek Podcast time. I'm Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak. Where were you on Friday night?
I was hanging out at a place called the Metal Farm, otherwise known as Luke Carl's house.
Nice.
Yeah, Luke Carl, serious Hair Nation DJ, if you don't know.
That guy's awesome.
You'll be hearing more from him in the future.
Ozzy's Boneyard, all that good stuff.
Right, and actually, I almost cursed him this week because a lot of people were complaining about hearing things like Nickelback on Hair Nation.
Really?
Yeah, and it turns out it's like a weekend where they're introducing a new channel called The Rock Bar. So it's not Hair Nation, and it's not Luke's fault. So
okay.
He's spared from the
I was
going to
say, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, I was about to go cuss him out. What the fuck are you
going crazy on him.
Yeah. But,
he does not know the depth of your Nickelback hatred.
No, he doesn't. I haven't hated on Nickelback in quite a while.
You haven't unleashed that fury in a little bit.
Coming, but
yeah. Bracket Brawl almost had you bubbling over.
Oh yeah, that was a painful reminder. So the Killer Dwarfs are in town, or they were in town a week or so ago, and I wasn't able to make the Mike Tramp interview, and then Aaron had something come up with work for his job.
It sucks.
So Aaron went solo last week. This week I go solo.
I thought we weren't going to do this.
I know.
Well. Tit for tat, I guess.
I know. Huh? It's a Chris's Comet.
Yeah. Chris's Comet. It's the new name of the show.
Yeah.
Out of here, Camaro. You're done.
You'll start the Aaron Camaro invasion.
You damn right I will.
So I got to, Luke was kind enough to invite us out to his house and said, hey, Killer Dwarfs are coming to town. They're going to stay at my house the night before they kick off their southern tour in Memphis here in Nashville. And so he's like, you want to come out? I said, absolutely. And Russ, and I, as you'll hear in the interview, Russ was the first interview that Aaron and I did together for the show.
He was really the first big guy that gave us a chance.
Right.
He had no idea who we were, but he took a chance on us.
Yeah.
And we did pretty good with him for that first interview. Not bad for our first one. We get better over time. But
I listened back to it in preparation for this, and I sound scared to death. So thanks for coming on with us. It sounds NPR or something.
Way back then, we were just trying to feel things out.
Right.
Russ was awesome with us, though.
He was. And he was great this time, too. So basically what you're going to hear, it's a two-part thing. The first 20 minutes, basically, is me sitting, and actually Billy Hardaway, one of our writers, went up with me. And it's us sitting around Luke's patio outside, and it's with the whole band. Like, they're all sitting there.
Man.
So it sounds a little chaotic. And actually, in the bonus track, you'll hear the first few minutes where it's a little bit of nonsense of us just bullshitting around.
I got to hear a little bit of that. You guys got to check that out. It's freaking hilarious.
So, but yeah, this is basically the first 20 minutes is just hanging out and just bullshitting with them and finding out some stuff. But there's some interesting stories in here, too, about, like, their first tour in the U.S. with Saxon and how they're big in Texas. And
nice.
You'll hear a reference to me right as it fades out, me asking about Daryl's Iron Maiden story. And as with typical Decibel Geek tradition, we had a little bit of a malfunction with the recorder. So
it's the curse of the Metal Farm.
It is. And we've actually had a whole interview with Luke that you've never heard because
reoccurring problems with the curse of the Metal Farm.
But the good news is, if you go back and listen to, I think it was episode 12 when we interviewed Russ, Russ tells the whole Iron Maiden story. So you're not missing it. Just go back in the archive and listen to it that way.
Perfect.
So you're going to hear that, and then we'll come back, and then you'll hear another part of the interview done in a different way. So we'll be right. Oh, almost forgot Geeks of the Week.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say something, but I thought maybe you were, because I could see you were winding it out to introduce it, so I thought maybe you were saving that for the middle break or something.
Got way too much on my mind. All right, Geeks of the Week, the ones that had shared the Mike Tramp episode and retweeted it on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter was DJ Novak, Jamie Tigertails, Jay Arnold, and Stuart Brown. And Facebook, Joe Lescon, Todd Cunningham, Lee Maslin from the Audio Junkies podcast, Robert DePasqua, Andy LaFon, Billy Hardaway, Derek Novak, Dave Shirt. That guy's awesome.
Yeah, he is.
Brent Walter, Scott Yeager, JTB's Groovy Record Room, Shane Aber, and Rodney Dixon.
All these people are awesome.
You guys are awesome. You guys are our advertising. If you like what you hear this week and you want to help spread the word, share it on Facebook, retweet it on Twitter, and I'll mention you in next week's show.
Awesome. And again, thanks to Mike Tramp for coming on last week.
Absolutely.
Hanging out with me.
Yeah, he just wrapped up his tour.
Doesn't sound like I had as much fun as you had, though.
Well, you're about to hear.
I guess so.
Here's me with the Killer Dwarfs. because as much as we wish you were
Chainsaw
starting the tour here in Nashville, you're starting it tomorrow in Memphis.
Yeah.
Why'd you decide on Memphis for the first place?
They're the only people that would have us.
Yeah.
Nashville is not a big music town.
What?
You're there.
We actually started in Buffalo. We are professional alcoholics, and this is a drinking tour, really. Yeah,
the evidence is right in front of me, too.
Yeah, and then we play songs on the side when we have to. We wanted to come down and see Luke is going to be Luke Carl from Sirius Satellite Radio. I think he does the easy listening show.
Yeah.
He,
you can tell by his look.
Yeah, yeah. We call him Baby Elvis.
Yeah, Baby Elvis.
And, wanted to come down and visit him because we've visited the Metal Farm before and we thought it would be great, and he's going to come down and host a show in Memphis tomorrow, and we love it down here, and we wanted to get away from all the snow and stuff in Canada.
We are Canadian, right?
Yeah.
You had a fun winter, didn't you?
We had a fun winter. I had like 20 foot of snow at my house.
It's the worst one on record since you've been keeping time.
He keeps saying that.
Yeah.
Since Jeebus, baby Jeebus was keeping time.
Well, I watched the news and they said...
I know you do. Everything's true on TV.
Well, one of our head writers, Wally, who's hung out with Daryl.
Yeah, Wally. Yeah.
Everybody's Wally World.
I was telling him it was a bad winter for Tennessee, and I remember complaining to him on Facebook saying, "Yeah, it was like 14 degrees today." He said, "Shut the fuck up."
We had 40 below, like day in, day out.
Shut
the fire truck up.
I see it.
Put the heat on. We got comedy coming over.
But so Southern Tour, you guys have been big in Texas for a long, long time. San Antonio,
big in Texas. That's an oxymoron. That's like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah,
we love Texas. The first time we ever played in the United States of America was in San Antonio, Texas. We played in Canada for years, and we tried to get down here, and we had a number one album in San Antonio in 1983. And or 84 or something like that. I don't know what happened.
Jingle State.
And basically,
come swap.
It's probably our favorite place on the planet to play. And we haven't been there in like easily 20 years. And the people down there are so gracious and hospitable, like you people in Tennessee.
Oh, that's nice.
And the food is great, and you know they just love rock and roll, and the weather's great, and we love it.
Cool.
We would have loved to play Nashville, by the way. Opera wouldn't have.
But it's not a big music town.
Yeah.
We tried to stay at Taylor Swift.
Maybe next time. Yeah. Maybe next time we'll come through. Yeah, but we might just play in Luke's backyard.
Not everybody loves us, man. They just didn't love us.
Well, everybody that listens to this show does. So.
Okay, that's right. That's good.
We've played lots of your stuff.
Go Decibel Geeks. Love you, too.
So I'm happy we could finally...
Chainsaw!
And Aaron said to tell you, sorry, couldn't make it. He's on call. He's a...
Oh, that's
funny. I hear about you all the time.
Do you?
From those guys. Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wally.
Wally and Rich and them, yeah.
And Rich. And
Rich is on the cruise, right?
Yeah.
Rich is our friend.
Yeah, Rich is like... He's done way more with the Decibel Geek name travel-wise than we could ever do. He goes to like
Rich
all of those festivals.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He is.
Nice
don't
guy.
Tell him we said that. Erase all this.
We really don't like him, but just pretend we like him.
I mean, I like him, but I don't trust him.
I mean, the whole cruise thing was fun.
Yeah.
You know, and they're Canada A, the A-team.
Right, the A-team.
It was a fun thing.
I guess you guys got to meet Kate, too, I'm sure.
You sure?
Yeah,
awesome. Kate's amazing.
Kate came to our... We just did... a show in Canada, and Kate came out with her A-team comrades and stuff.
Yeah.
And
That's cool.
She's a photographer, too.
She's
pro.
Kate's Patron.
No, that's Rebecca.
Yeah, we got a special
Rebecca?
Present for Kate.
The Patron?
Yeah, we have a Patron present.
Yeah, Rich told us about the Patron Club that she started up.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have a good picture we took.
Yeah, and Rich came back. He came here for a few days after the cruise was over, and so I finally got to meet him, too. And we all went out and saw Dick Wagner play at a club here.
Dick Wagner's a friend of mine, and he's a great cat.
Yeah.
And he's he's a legend.
Yeah,
like if people don't know, they might not know his name or anything, but...
You know his work.
Alice Cooper.
Yeah, if you... any of the Coop stuff and, you know, Only Women Bleed and I'll Never Cry and all that stuff, he's a great, great guy.
Yeah.
I'm honored to, you know, have him as a pal and everything.
Yeah, we've stayed in touch with him and...
when he was in town, we sat down and did a whole episode. Well, we have a soundtrack. We did a whole talk with him on the Alice Cooper Dada album.
Awesome. That's classic because...
Yeah.
I'll see you before.
To take your seat, you got the power on, she got the need, she spends her life through, breathing up on me.
Speedos.
It's in the wrong key.
That was terrible.
It's the wrong key. Edit that out.
Cries alone at night.
It is the wrong key. The Dada album, okay, I got a great story for you. So
we owe Dick $100 for that, by the way.
Yeah,
you probably should.
Yeah,
the Dada album was done at Phase One, and yeah, we were actually—I don't know what we were doing. What album were we doing?
It was 83.
83. So we're doing the first album in there.
We're doing Big Deal.
No, first album, 83, right?
Yeah, right. I'm the musicologist.
Thank you for reminding us when we did our first album.
He is the decimal
musicologist. Are you?
Yeah. I think we were going to get the Masters or something near there.
No, we weren't. We were doing the first album. He's absolutely correct.
First album came out in 83.
But the engineers in there...
yeah, I was there.
No, remember the Bob Ezrin stuff. The Bob Ezrin stories and everything.
Right.
And
remember that.
I'm not going to tell that story.
Oh, come on.
But anyways, no, I'll tell you talking about. I'm going to tell you a story about
the Fairlight.
Yeah, Fairlight and everything. But the Dada thing... became really great friends with the engineers in there that were doing it, and they knew I was I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan. No. I'm actually going to do an Alice Cooper thing interview right after this, but they got me. I'm going to get in trouble for this. I have 4 original lyric sheets that he wrote the lyrics from Dada.
No shit.
Yeah, from like the hotel room and yellow paper and stuff where he scratched everything up. But I really don't, Alice. And stuff in my house.
He wouldn't care.
Yeah. And I text him. I have it in my Dada album, and that's a great piece of rock history for me.
Yeah, because there's not a lot out there about it. And like Dick went through every song.
Exactly. Alice was going through a weird period.
He doesn't
and everything
remember
there.
It
was almost like the thin.
Yeah,
tie thing.
It was. He calls it his blackout period.
Yeah, I know it well. But I love the Coop. I saw the Coop last year. I've seen the Coop a million times, and Luke's actually met the Coop. And Dunks met the Coop. What am I talking about?
Yeah. Well, no, I'll tell a quick story because we do love the Coop. Russ and I fully grew up with them.
And, when we first started, me and Dunk did like Great Tudes, Caught in a Dream, and
covers.
Like,
yeah, we grew up doing the covers.
Yeah.
But I've never gone after a rock star's autograph before in my life.
Right.
I've never actually chased a rock star.
You've asked me for mine a couple of times, but I'm not giving it to you.
But I had the Killer record. Remember Killer?
Yeah.
It came in 72, I guess it was. And, well, the calendar that ripped off the LP. There's a calendar that ripped off it, and it opened up, and it was a calendar. And it was 1972, and it's Alice hanging. It's a hanging poster of him hanging. That's really cool.
Yeah.
It opens up. So I called the guy that knew Alice Cooper's road manager in New York, and Alice was playing with Rob Zombie in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I want to meet Alice, and I really want to get his autograph on this poster.
Because
it's classic memorabilia for me, man, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
And the guy arranged it. And I went to Alice Cooper's hotel, and he showed up, and his daughter was there, and he was totally
Calico.
Cool. Yeah. Totally knows the Killer Dwarfs, was
Sweet.
Totally cool. And my wife was pregnant at the time, and he was like, come out to the baby. And it was really I go, Alice Cooper just blessed my baby.
How big of a trip is it that he knows your band?
That's a great
30 years.
I mean, I think, he was just probably lying anyways. He was like, when we meet people,
he
remember
wasn't lying.
No, really. Just kidding.
Anyway, that was pretty cool. That's the only time I've met him.
We love the Coop, though. He's like he's a classic rock and roll dude, man.
Yeah.
He's
well,
a legend, really.
Well, I told
him. Isn't he? He's much of a legend.
Right, then, yes. Right. They were still booing him when we came on.
I told you when, and it's funny we're talking to you now because it's been a long time
it's
coming because
from that.
We were on episode 11 when we interviewed you.
Wow.
You were the first person that Aaron and I together interviewed.
Wow, you were on 11.
And you were on 11.
Yes, I was on 11.
And so now
don't look at it.
This will be like 130 something.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's been
that's
a long
great.
Time.
You guys do
that's
a great
cool,
job.
Man. Congratulations to you guys. Yeah.
Oh, appreciate
gone
that.
On with
but
that.
I remember telling you at the time because I had researched that you were into Alice Cooper and I could tell you that I can tell because yeah. of the sense of humor you put into, you know, you'll yeah. put into stuff, and the band in general.
Yeah.
You guys are big into the performance.
We're
part.
We're very showy and stuff, yeah. but we were always like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but that
yeah.
did come from that for sure. Absolutely, 100%.
Rubbed right off on you.
Yeah, you know, you our motto, Dunk and I, when we started the band, our motto was like, you're gonna get the 250, the 350 show for $2.
Right.
You know what I mean? We wanted to do performances and stuff.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of, you know, now we're pretty toned down. We lay down on couches and stuff when we play. But back in the olden days, we
Harry Como.
Yeah.
I want to live forever. We just laid out.
But back in those days, we chopped up teddy bears, and we I had this other antic that we did. We would get breakaway whiskey bottles.
Yeah.
And I would have like blood capsules in my mouth, and Dunk would come out from behind the kit, and I would be like pretending I'm drinking this whiskey bottle, and Dunk would grab it off me. And then crack me on the head with this, and then the blood would come out, and we had audience freaks, and I would fall down.
I forgot about
Remember
this.
That, Dunk?
We had custom sugar bottles. They looked like whiskey bottles.
Right.
Made of sugar. They were from a prop company
yeah.
that did movies.
Yeah.
And I'd crack this guy over the head with this, and he'd bleed, and then people would go, boo, I'm the drummer, boo. And I'd go, dudes,
come on.
Become
the most hated man of the room.
Yeah.
The drummer fucked up the show for everybody.
But
we never killed the singer. We were so good at it at a point. We could have been actors in a movie because I do it so convincing.
You should bring that back.
They go, boo, the motherfucker. And now everybody knows. Just cracked a singer with a bottle. Like, it got really weird. We stopped doing it after a while.
Well, we always had a lot of fun. We always had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, we always had to try to have a sense of humor, and because back in those days we would do like 250 shows a year, and
yeah.
you know, it's tiring and stuff, but we have to entertain ourselves,
right.
and if we're having a good time, everyone else is going to have a good time. You know, we always try to give a positive vibe to everybody, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's entertainment. We don't have the cure to cancer here.
Right? Yeah.
It's
supposed to be fun.
It's all fun.
Yeah. Well, are there any cans of it? Was it Cuddly Cola?
Cuddly Cola. They've all disappeared.
They're all gone.
You know who has one?
Who? Junior.
Motherfucker Junior.
Yeah, of course he does. One.
He's an old drum tech of mine.
Oh, really?
And he wasn't much of a drum tech. He only smoked a lot
Dunk,
of dope.
This is going to go on the air.
I don't care.
I don't care if he hears that. I don't tell the truth.
Nobody loves him. I don't want
to. Junior.
No, I love. He's lovable.
I'll send
this
the
day I still know him, but he was cheap, right? He was cheap. And, you know, he set my kit up,
yeah.
but he couldn't tune a drum. And
he's just
drum
like
tech
Luke.
Is really valuable if he can tune a drum.
Usually, yeah.
He couldn't tune a drum, and he used to
But he could
steal.
Tune a fish.
Yeah.
I think he just stole a lot of our stuff.
Right?
Just steal memorabilia, he'd hoard stuff.
Oh,
so he's
wow.
got this giant, he's even got a tricycle for
it. So you had your biggest fan drum teching for you.
Yeah.
What was the, who came up with the idea for that video?
Which one?
The one with the Cuddly Cola. With
we stand alone.
Yeah, we stand that, alone.
That was in a series.
The makeup.
That was in a series of videos. So keep the spirit, you know, the crate thing and everything,
yeah.
right? That was, and then Stand Tall, and then We Stand Alone. And you can see it's like
a progression.
There's a storyline right through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you can see at the end of We Stand Alone, we smash the crate, we
right.
become corporate. Because we got our big deal then, right? When we first started... and did Keep the Spirit and Stand Tall. They were independent. We paid for all that stuff ourselves. That record was an independent record back in 1986.
Right.
And we sold 100,000 units of that record,
mm-hmm.
which was unheard of in those days. Like,
sure.
Bullshit!
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's unheard of in these days.
That's
right,
it.
We did.
Get the fucking gun.
Yeah.
And
the first murder ever on the Decibel Geek podcast.
That would be awesome. I know how to shoot guns now. Yeah, keep it down by your penis.
But he's right. Who could do that now? Even
well, it was a miracle. But we had, you know, we just try to keep the element of comedy and everything in that thing. And by the time we got to the Epic deal, which was We Stand Alone, we called the record Big Deal, right?
Right.
You know, the sarcasm and, you know.
Yeah,
that's
we're looking
right.
at it
big
right
deal.
Now.
Yeah, look at that picture. That's
this is
like, Luke. Have
yeah.
you seen that?
Actually,
that's
if we could have put big fucking deal, we would have.
Right,
that's really what we wanted to do.
But we were just
could
trying
do that
to.
Today.
We were trying to take a
could
shot at getting the big deal. We got a $10 million deal when we were like, you know, 25 years old. We were all excited and shit out of New York. You know, we were like living the dream
Epic
for God's sakes,
yeah.
right? And going,
right.
let's spend every goddamn penny they have, you know, and
yeah.
And have fun making a record. This is going to be the fucking most fucked up interview ever.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's going
to
be on
We're
the
happy to present
it.
Did that fucking
go towards the record?
No, overall, over the three records that we did, right?
You know, went to your pocket.
It didn't. When you get that kind of deal,
he's filling in for Aaron.
Basically,
today.
When you get that kind of deal, this is what happens. They're holding the cash. They're just not like sending you the fucking money. But you can go in and record an album for $500,000, which we did. Like, big deal was like $140,000. Then you chalk another $60,000 off of the video and then the promotion and everything. Then we went and did Dirty Weapons. That was a $500,000 record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're not sending you the money, but they're putting on your tab at 500% interest.
Right. That's the money that
you pay that
much.
So recoup that back at 75 cents a record. You're never getting fucking paid. It's like when you get your MasterCard and it says, you owe $20,000, it'll take you 99 years to pay this off. Well, I'll be quite dead by then.
Yeah. Unless there's some serious advances.
And we didn't get in it for the money and all that shit. And
was it for the chicks?
Oh, yeah, of course it was for the chicks.
I had to make sure.
It was for all the peelers.
Chicks now, are good, though.
Of course. We love rock and roll.
Yeah.
There's three chords. We know both of them. You know what I mean? And we're like a gang of pirates.
Right.
And we just like traveling around and having fun together and, going to shitty truck stops and eating corn dogs.
What's the greatest rock and roll record ever?
Back in Black.
There you have it.
Don't you think? Maybe? It's probably... That's off the top of my head,
I love Back.
It's a pretty serious record.
Donk, what's the greatest rock and roll record ever? You took too long.
No. Rolling Stones.
Some Girls.
Exile means
dirty word. No, I'm just kidding.
No, he's making shit up now. Okay.
Jerry.
No.
Fair warning, Van Halen.
Awesome.
Great interesting. Jerry.
Love that.
Great Van Halen. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
That is an interesting pick. Yeah. Top Jimmy.
I would love Top. That's a great record.
Fair warning's Mean Street.
Mean Streets, yeah.
And yourself?
Yeah.
One more.
You don't want to hear what I have to say. Now, Frank Zappa, Joe's Garage.
I knew he was going to say
Joe's
that.
Joe's Garage. Yeah.
And Luke?
Sure.
Led Zeppelin, too.
Nice.
I wish we could have worked with the guy that produced Led Zeppelin.
It was kind of
beyond hard, man.
So, Russ, what was one of the first big tours y'all got on?
I mean, I'm a big beat loop.
Kind of,
the
first, kind of broke y'all in the States.
The first big tour in the States, I'll tell you, the first, I think, tour we did in the States was with a Saxon.
Biff Byford.
The singers get all the chicks. That's what he said to me.
He would know.
And Biff, and if you don't know this, Rob Reiner, when he did Spinal Tap, he went on the road with Saxon for a month to get a feel of how this goes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And so when we went on the road with Saxon,
they left y'all out of the movie.
They left us out of the movie, but it was quite Spinal Tap-ish. But it was fun, and I did the Monsters of Rock cruise last year, and my next door cabin mate was Biff. Actually,
did he have sex on the cruise?
He was screaming a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was a donkey or a small farm animal.
He didn't like it.
Didn't you see during his show? He went, "I'm never fucking doing this again."
Why?
And he was yelling and shit in my cap next door to me, and he was like, "Fuck this!"
Wasn't his thing.
He didn't like it. Yeah. And I can dig that.
It's not for everybody.
And he's a veteran, man. And they were great. And weren't they great? They were really good.
That last album he put out was.
And
really
he looks great, and he does a great job. You know, I could. I was like happy to go.
But getting back to the tour you did with them, what year was that?
That was 1987, Dunk?
No.
Yeah.
86.
What tour were they on?
One of the first tours.
What tour was that?
What's that album?
Yeah, as a song,
Give Us the Stage.
Yeah.
Give Us the Lights. Powerful sound to rock the nation.
I'm about a Saxon expert.
Rock the nation.
Big wheels are rolling all through the night.
He knows it all.
I love him.
But I just, that's all I know. You don't know that record?
No,
it was a record that never sold. Anyway, we were on that tour. Yeah.
But didn't you tour with Accepted for that?
Yes, we did.
Because it was pictures of Udo in Stantel.
Yeah, that was the first.
Silver spandex
pants. That was the first.
And Kenya. And running shoes. And a t-shirt.
And
that's the Spinal Tap thing came right, like later, came right to me. Remember they were wearing spandex, Spinal Tap, or the silver
spandex? Song in there somewhere.
And that's what he was wearing.
The first time we toured with Nazareth.
What was the first show on the tour with Saxon?
Longhorn Ballroom in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah. Remember we did Corpus Christi?
Did y'all ever play in Odessa,
Corpus
Texas?
Corpus Christi with them? No, we didn't play in Odessa.
Longhorn Ballroom.
Longhorn Ballroom.
Longhorn Ballroom. Sex Pistols play.
Yes, that's the classic Sex Pistols fucking gig.
Did y'all ever play in Odessa?
It's a big red deck
hangout. I guess I think we did.
Maybe when where I saw y'all.
Did you see us in Texas?
I'm from Texas.
Are you from Texas? Where are you from in Texas?
Alpine.
Okay, I love
West Texas.
We love Texas, man.
Miss Avery, my old lady, went to UT.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Big 12 championship.
Oh, and I know I saw y'all. I just can't remember where and with who.
Just ask some questions there, baby.
No, it's all good. Since he's here, I have to ask about the Iron Maiden story.
Iron Maiden? Yeah. Iron Maiden?
Pretty chaotic, right?
Man, so far so good. Sounds like a party. I really, really wish I'd have gone now. I wish I could have.
It was a lot of fun, and I was happy to actually get to meet them. And so, you know, Luke and Russ actually had to go back onto Skype and actually did a little thing with Mitchell Thon, our friend. And
Killer Dwarfs, they're popular dudes.
They are. And Russ has been helping out Mitch with his new show. And so while that was going on, you know, of course, I had the malfunction with the audio recorder, and I was like, crap, I want to get more on tape here.
Right.
And Daryl was still downstairs, and I was like, can you sit down with me for a little while and talk a little bit more? And he was kind enough to do that. And, you know, Daryl's got his own, you know, history and resume even outside the Dwarves.
Right.
And I wanted to talk to him about that. And some of the stuff he did was, like, he did this band Laidlaw back in the 90s. And which featured some well-known people. And
wasn't Mark St. John's brother in that band?
Yeah, Michael Norton. Nice. And we'll get into that a little bit in the interview. So we start up talking about you know, his time with Laidlaw, and then we also talk about his other band, Auto Man, and getting back together with the Dwarves.
I like Auto Man.
And also one thing Russ had talked about briefly in our first interview with him, I asked Daryl about, and that was sharing the same studio with Kiss in 92. When they were working on an album together, and there's some interesting stories about his, conversations with Gene Simmons and stuff, and
right on.
Also, talk a little bit about the current tour that they're on. They just conquered San Antonio last night and packed house, and a little
love
bit about
them in
the
Texas.
They're touring in support of the Start At One album, and you've heard a little bit of that stuff throughout the breaks here, and we encourage you to go on Amazon and buy that album.
Yeah, all this music that's being discussed today, and of course all music that's ever discussed or played or whatever here on the Decibel Geek podcast, we always encourage you to go out and support these artists, you know, and buy the music. And the best way you can do that is go to www.decibelgeek.com. You're going to find the Amazon link right there. You're going to find all that awesome Killer Dwarfs shit, and you're going to be able to order all of it right there. You click on that link, it takes you to amazon.com. Now, every Killer Dwarfs album, every DVD, every t-shirt, everything that you order, we're going to get a little kickback off of that here at the Decibel Geek podcast. And the beautiful thing about it is it doesn't cost you one single penny more than it would have had you just not supported us.
It's a great way to show
support
for the show.
You might as well support us, right? Sure. Yeah. So also at www.decibelgeek.com, that's like the mothership. That's the home base for Decibel Geek, everything involved. We've got writers there putting out amazing articles. I'm sure you're going to hear some Killer Dwarf stuff this week from our Canadian friends. You can order yourselves a t-shirt there. I know you got a batch of brand new ones going out.
Yep, going out this week.
You can tip your DJs there if you don't have nothing you want to order on Amazon. If you already own everything the Killer Dwarfs already have ever come out with, you just want to make a donation, you can do that there as well.
Yeah, so that's it. And so we're going to go into another about 20 minutes with Daryl Dwarf, and you're going to hear a little bit of Laidlaw going into that if you haven't ever heard them before.
No more solo albums.
You sure?
Yeah, no, it's okay. Not as fun. I mean, you're having too much fun without me, and I don't like that.
Well, we'll try to have more fun together next week.
Okay.
We have a lot of fun stuff, actually. We just planned out the next 2 months. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot
of
work.
Lots of stuff.
So, so here's my talk with Daryl, and we'll see y'all next week.
See ya. You see me crying. You see me trying. Said sorry, honey, I never told you goodbye. Well, if you see my baby, said Lord, won't you send her home? 'Cause by the time she realized she's wrong, I might not be alone. The kitchen.
So,
outside of what the Dwarfs is made.
Give those who don't know the story, who, the members of Laidlaw and how you guys got started.
Well, it's an interesting thing. You know, when Killer Dwarfs is obviously, you know, the band,
yeah.
you know, that Russ and I started in 30 years ago.
Right.
And the love is, that's the band, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, rock and roll is not always forgiving.
Right.
And, you know, we have never broke up. Right. Killer Dwarfs officially. We never went to the press and said we're done and we yeah. hate each other. You know, we've never done that. But we've gone with the climate mm-hmm. of rock and roll
yeah.
And what it's dealt out for us. And definitely during that grunge era, you know, it was time that you just kind of go underground. There's not much more you can do.
Right.
They just don't want to see you.
Yeah.
That force comes along, right? So I moved to L.A. because mm-hmm. Toronto is not a place where you can survive
yeah.
the music business when something like that happens.
Yeah.
So L.A. is. So I moved to L.A., and a guy named Craig DeFalco, who was Mike Anthony's tech from
yeah.
Van Halen, he started the band, Laidlaw. It's his band, right?
Right.
He called it Moonshine at first. But mm-hmm. then Nikki Sixx got involved and signed the band and changed the name to Laidlaw.
Okay.
So that's how that happened.
What was he like to work with in those days?
Nikki?
Yeah.
He was awesome. He was a totally sober.
Yeah.
He was in a new kind of part in his life. He was with Donna Derrico then and mm-hmm. had a couple of kids. And he was in a good headspace.
So are we talking like mid-90s?
No. Later.
Later
96, 97.
Okay.
No, he was working out every day, really right. into working out. And they were with a new management company at the time. I think Howard Kaufman and Motley Crue was getting back together full
right.
time
with Vince. Yeah.
It was kind of a good time.
Yeah. And so, and the other guys that were in the band, who were the other guys?
Buzzy James.
Yeah.
Awesome slide guitar player, great musician all around. Mike Norton.
That was Mark St. John's brother.
Yeah. Mark yeah. St. John's brother, yeah. And Tommy Laidlaw, the singer.
Okay.
And me on drums.
Was Mark St. John ever around?
He came out once.
What was he like?
Yeah, well, I met him briefly.
He's a bit of a mystery with
yeah,
Kiss fans.
I think he had tendonitis or something.
Yeah.
There was an issue that he couldn't play.
Yeah, he had like a arthritic disease or something in his hand.
Yeah, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And I think that was pretty crushing to him.
Right.
Who wouldn't it be crushing?
Well, yeah.
You can't play your guitar. Properly.
Yeah, that's your whole dream, right?
Yeah. So that's sort of how that went. And I
right.
just had a good run with Laidlaw. We did two records, mm-hmm. and then Nicky shut his label down. We were signed to his label. And we were on the road with ZZ Top.
Oh, for wow.
72 shows.
That must have been
point.
Great.
We toured with Scorpions and Motley Crue, lots
yeah.
of Motley Crue shows, and Leonard Skinner.
Really?
And we were Southern Rock Band.
Yeah, you were. How do you
so,
remember
I mean,
that?
Nicky set us up, man.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know what? It's not the flavor of the month.
Yeah.
And Southern Rock is a certain kind of cliquey market. And back
yeah.
then, when we were starting to tour, bands like No Doubt were stars.
Yeah.
And we just weren't the flavor of the month.
It's a bit of a confusing time as far as hard
yeah.
rock goes
yeah.
is concerned.
And it just didn't take off.
Yeah.
But we had a great run with it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
7 years was with that band.
That's great. Well, and I remember I saw Scorpions actually open for Motley Crue during that period.
Yeah. Did you see the Maximum Rock tour? Because that's the tour we were on.
No, you guys weren't on
yeah,
this
Yeah, it
one.
Was a Shed tour. We were third on the
Well, this
bill.
Was a Shed thing, but this was just... It was just Randy Castillo was playing drums for Motley.
Yes, that's...
So maybe
we did that tour,
okay.
too.
Did you play the Nashville show?
We might have not done
well,
Nashville.
The Nashville show... Scorpions played, and then when Motley came out, it was just a downpour for the whole set.
Oh, yeah?
But the things I took away from that show was... The Scorpions might be one of the best live bands
yeah.
I've ever seen.
I agree.
Tightest.
Funny, Russ and I were just talking about that last night.
Oh, really?
And actually, Russ, Jerry, and I were talking about that.
Just incredible.
How great Scorpions really are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't know that it's any different than the album.
Great guitar work.
Yeah.
Between Matthias and Rudolph. Wow.
Well, and also being, I'm a Kiss fan and an Alice Cooper fan, so I'm into visuals, their light show was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like it's like and,
yeah.
and then Motley came and Motley couldn't compete.
Yeah, they had big production on the road.
Yeah, they honestly blew Motley right off the stage.
You think they did, eh?
Yeah.
Good, man, you know.
Well, because all I took away from Motley's set was Mick Mars was about 300 times louder than everything else.
Yeah.
And all I could hear, and his solos were so loud, like it might hear my ears were killing me.
Yeah.
So
that was a weird time for them because
yeah.
Tommy Lee was
off doing
in jail,
rap
or yeah, we went through a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
he got in jail. He had issues, and
right.
I guess he had a falling out with the band and went and did something. I don't even know what happened there. I just know that
he got
Tommy
into
wasn't
his,
there all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't get the feeling he's a big rock and roll fan much anymore. I think he's moved on to other avenues.
Yeah. You don't. It's kind of weird with Tommy. You don't really hear about him now much.
So, no.
Like as much. Like,
I think the Motley things is just a paycheck, and then he does his DJ thing now.
That's why they're on their last thing, maybe. I don't know. All I know is Nikki Sixx was awesome to work with, and I think he's a good businessman.
He's a smart guy.
I think he's a smart guy, and I think, you know, he's the brains behind Motley Crue.
Right. That's true.
Yep.
Well, and then, you know, you still got Auto Man going on.
I do, yeah. Auto Man, I do, and I don't right now, because let's face it, I can't be in two bands at once, and I don't want to be, because it's just too much. And being a singer is a different mindset.
Right.
When I'm a drummer, I just like to be a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
Like being a singer, then I put the drums down and I put all my energies and kind of vibe into being that front man.
Right.
But when I'm in the Killer Dwarfs, I'm Daryl Dwarf, and that's what I want to do 24 hours a day.
Gotcha.
So I've kind of hung up Auto Man right now.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, the band lives on the website. And
I enjoyed
all
it.
All the elements. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, we played some of that stuff on the show.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate it.
Wally and Rich just absolutely loved it.
Yeah, they've seen the band live, and it was a really cool band.
Yeah.
We were kind of weird. It was like AC/DC meets Skinner meets the Stones. It was a weird mix match, and it probably influenced me, you know, being in those other bands. And, you know, I'm not going to say we'll never do something again, but right now, Killer Door schedule is like full on.
Yeah,
like,
so
we're playing every month for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so you guys have a full schedule ahead of you.
Yes.
So I mean, it's exciting to be back on the road as the Dwarves.
Very exciting.
Yeah,
we're a family again.
Yeah,
and we get along awesome, and we have a new bass player.
Yeah,
a new blood. He's not really new. He's like the bass player in Auto Man.
Right.
He's a bass player in the Dwarves now.
Right.
Johnny Dwarf.
Yeah.
And, so John's in the band. He's the new blood. And then it's the original guys, Russ and I and Jerry Dwarf, from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
He played on Method of the Madness, and he played on the new record that's out, that's 20 years old.
Right.
And
just going to say how much I enjoy that one. You guys actually sent it to me.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed listening to
Start
it.
Start at One?
Start at One, yeah.
So we're really loving being in the Killer Dwarfs again.
That's great.
And we're seeing a resurgence of 80s metal. Like, it's like... What do you call it? Retro?
Well, what is it?
Yeah, why is it popular?
Well, and particularly in Toronto. Like, I mean, they've opened up two rock clubs.
I know.
And you've got like Slaughter will come into town to play one night at one and one night at the other.
Yeah, that's like the old days. That's like the old
days. There's a real scene.
There's a scene up there.
Yeah.
Rock Pile East and West.
Yeah.
Great clubs too.
And Nashville, you know, we're turning in this area here is, you know, having a resurgence with the rock stuff too.
Yeah.
And
what's happening in
Vegas
everywhere?
Vegas also is picking up too.
Well, we're playing Vegas
in
October.
There's a lot of guys out there.
We're doing the Whiskey in LA in October. Yeah, I mean, we're touring a lot in America.
That's great.
We love America, and that's the real key market for us. So.
Well, while I have you here, we're big Kiss fans, so I've got to ask you. Russ had kind of told a little bit about, when we talked to him a few years ago, about you guys being in the same studio with Kiss back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
What are your memories of that time?
Well, I just thought it was really ironic. You know, we're in Studio A.
Which studio was this?
I think it was called, what was the name of that studio?
It was out in L.A.?
Yeah. It was in L.A., and actually...
Maybe Fortress, or...
No, man, it's so weird, I just can't remember.
It was Fortress Record 1.
Russ can't remember it either, because we were in about three studios there.
Right.
Might have been called Trax Studio.
Well, that's when they were working with Ezrin again.
Yeah. So Andy Johns is doing our record, and Bob Ezrin's doing their record.
Wow.
It was pretty surreal.
That's some history.
And, you know, all I know is, like, I'm a giant Kiss fan and grew up with them as a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm finishing my drum tracks... And there was a picnic table in the courtyard, a table just outside the studio in the courtyard, all fenced in and everything. And Gene Simmons would sit there and write lyrics for that record.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd go out there to get a breather, and he'd tell me to sit down. And we'd sit down and chat for a minute. And a couple times he asked me what rhymes with whatever for his writing lyrics.
Right.
I'm not saying I had wrote any lyrics on the Kiss record, but he'd ask me what rhymes with this. And I'd try to come up with something, but I mean...
As I say, which song did you write?
Yeah, I didn't, that's the only thing. But I mean, that's how, you know, he was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd... you could kind of get to know them a little bit, you know, being in and out of there, but that's it. You know, we were just, it's all work. We were working. We weren't hanging out and partying with Kiss. But they were nice. Paul Stanley was playing his Gillig guitars for us one day. Bob Ezrin came in the studio and was goofing around with Andy and playing songs. And,
oh, that's
and
cool. Like,
Bob Ezrin's an icon, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's amazing.
Like, I mean, I love his Alice Cooper stuff.
Yeah, well, we were talking to Dick Wagner about the Dada album, and I just straight up asked him, because, you know, Bob's got a reputation as a taskmaster in the studio.
Yes.
And, so I was like, what was Bob like? And then Bob at the time, he was having some demons at the time in the early 80s, just like Alice was.
I know that.
And so, you know, it was and Dick did also. And I was asking Dick, what was the atmosphere at that point? And he's like, well, overall, we got the job done, but at the same time, Bob could be very, like, dominating in the studio. Like, he's got a vision, and he's going to see it through whether you like it or not.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, he's a true producer in the sense of the word. Like,
yes.
If you hire him, you're getting his vision, not... He's not working for you.
Right.
So, Andy Johns, I mean, about a legend, you know.
He's, to me, he's a big reason that Killer Dwarfs escalated, number one, to another level and after Dirty Weapons. And for me as a drummer, he made my career, man.
Yeah.
He really did, just with his seal.
Approval.
Right. Yeah. He's a big drum guy, man.
Well, if you get...
Work with John Bonham and stuff.
Yeah,
and
if he says you're good, then you're
pretty
good.
He gave me the confidence, too.
Yeah.
Confidence is everything for drummers.
Yeah.
If you're confident and you're confident to try things and pull things off,
right,
you can go a long way
as
a drummer.
Right.
He gave me that confidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we miss him very much.
Yeah.
He passed away last year. And,
right.
You know, he's a legend.
Yeah, he definitely is.
Yeah.
I was going to ask guys that have been in bands and done this stuff, and you work with Andy Johns, because I'm a music fan. I've played in bands, but nothing above club levels.
Yeah.
But when you're in the studio with a guy like Andy Johns, are you pestering the shit out of him going, how did you do this song? And how was this person like to work with? And
nope.
Because I don't know, maybe it's just because I like, now that's why I do a show.
Well, you're an interviewer.
I'm always wanting to ask
questions. You're the press.
Yeah.
You're going to do that.
I don't like that word press. I'm just a fan. But but I want to know all the behind the scenes of all that stuff. That's why I'm, you know, talking to you.
We would ask Andy those questions when we were partying.
Right.
Yeah, not when we were working.
Right.
Whatever. But we had lots of times we'd go to bars with him
and he'd open
hang
up.
Out at his bunker at his place. Yeah. Bunker's garage, and he'd tell us the stories. We wouldn't ask him.
Yeah.
He'd tell us. He loved talking about working with the Stones and Zeppelin and Blind Faith and all these bands. Like, he had no problem talking about it.
Yeah.
He loved it.
And I've learned that the producers are almost the people you want to talk to the most.
Yeah.
Because they were right there for all of it.
They know the dirt.
Yeah.
They know everything.
Not that we're digging for dirt, but...
No, but they know like, the funny stuff.
They were there from the ground up as far as creating albums and stuff like that goes.
They know how it went down.
Yeah. And I noticed over the... And maybe that has something to do with the production work with, like, your first album has a markedly different production sound to, like, you know, Dirty Weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, you hope it's going to rise
up. It's such a fatter sound as you guys went on.
A lot of it's money.
Yeah.
You know, and time. The time in the industry, you know, from 83 to 89.
Yeah.
A lot of big changes in gear.
Right.
You know, technology. A lot of changes.
Where does the whole gold mining thing come from at the beginning of
Tommy the Miner?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a real guy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a real guy. It's a crazy story. We were just talking about that the other day. We were playing this hotel in Trenton, Ontario called, I forget what it was called. Doesn't matter though. Oh, Sherwood Forest Inn is what the damn place was called.
Okay.
Yeah. And this old dude was at the pool table, and I was down in the bar shooting pool. And back then there was no ATM machines.
Right.
This is a long time ago. And he apparently was getting divorced from his wife, and he was spending his bank account.
Right.
So he said he had bought this tape deck, and the bank was closed, and he needed money to spend in the bar that night. And he was traveling. And he was from Cape Breton Island or something. He was traveling, right? And he wanted to sell me the tape deck, and it was a brand new tape deck. Ghetto Blaster. And I needed
one.
And I gave him $40 for it. That's all he wanted. I gave him $40 for it so he'd have some cash because the bank was closed. And you couldn't get money back then. Isn't that weird? Unless the bank was open. Yeah, this is early 80s.
Yeah, that's old school.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I remember.
You take
that
it for granted that you can just go to a bank and get money now.
Yeah, it's so much more convenient now.
So he was drunk and he was recording himself. And he was going to send a tape to his son.
Yeah.
Set tape. And that's him on the tape.
I always thought it was from a movie or something.
No, well, it's almost like a movie.
Because it sounds straight out of a movie.
It's his life.
That's
it's
crazy. Like,
he's talking to his son. We have the tape. And wow. We never released it or anything. Just, you know,
that'd be interesting to hear the whole thing.
Maybe we'll release it one day.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's passed on by now. The guy was about 70 back then.
Be like Kiss and do a bonus
edition. Yeah, but it's crazy, man. The stories he tells about his life, he was a coal miner.
Wow.
Like a full-on coal miner.
I done fucking mining. I done hard rock mining. I done fucking copper mining. Fucking gold mining. Yeah. I was one of the toughest in the fucking West.
That's
it. He's yelling at his son on it and shit. Oh,
oh really?
It's intense. There's some. Oh, it's like X-rated. Man.
Wow.
Yeah, you couldn't like. It's there's a lot of F-bombs and a lot of C-words and a lot of.
Oh really?
Yeah, he's going off. That's and that's why he gave it to me. He said just erase it. He told me to erase it, but I couldn't erase it.
Yeah.
The only way you erase it is tape over it.
Wow.
So I thought I'd listen to it and I went, wow, this is like something for the books.
Yeah, that's something you keep.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
So that's who Tommy the Miner is.
That's great.
He's a real guy, actually. We have no idea where he is.
That's
true. He's probably passed on, like I said.
Yeah, he sounded pretty old in
the tape. Long time ago. I'd say he was 68, 70.
Yeah, he's probably not around anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
and he lived a hard life, too.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the plans after the tour? Just working on, are you guys still working on new music?
Keep touring. Yeah, we have plans for live DVDs.
Cool.
We have plans for a new record.
Yeah.
Maybe not a full record, maybe just a few tracks, maybe an EP. We don't know. But we are going to do record new music.
Cool.
There's a couple of things that are surprises that I can't talk about. That's going to be released soon. Some music that isn't the Killer Dwarfs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's going to be. I totally can't talk about it.
I got you.
But we've recorded some other music for someone else.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty cool.
Well,
and so you'll be hearing about it within the next few weeks.
Cool.
We're very busy
with
everything right now.
A couple of years ago, Russ at the time was talking about a film crew doing a documentary. I don't know if that's still going on.
Yeah, that's on hiatus.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, look at that bug flying around. It's a June bug.
Oh, Jesus.
it's that whole thing because the dwarves weren't back together.
Right.
Russ was going to do that. So it was going to be like a bunch of footage. So now that we are back together, we'd rather make it more current.
Well, as I say,
and all the footage from before, too.
I say, now you can round it out with the tour. You're going to film a bunch of stuff from this tour, I'm assuming.
So, that will happen still. That's
cool.
Like I said, it's not going to maybe be the exact one that Russ had started.
Yeah.
So it's a different production team now.
Oh, okay.
That'll be put in place.
Cool.
The other production team isn't involved now.
What can, let's wrap things up, but before you leave, what can people expect from the tour, the show that you're bringing out?
The one that we're already on?
Yeah, people that are going to come out to see you.
I'll tell you, what's crazy about it is if anybody hasn't seen us before, they're in for a really different type of experience. Because we're a very different band, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially Russ, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how we're older now, but we're still doing the same stupid shit we did when we were 21.
Right.
And I don't know how we're doing it.
It's still as physical as before.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, Russ still does headstands.
I saw a picture of that from the cruise.
Still does it.
Yeah.
Still rides a tricycle. Still crouch.
Yeah, we saw the new version of the tricycle today.
Because that's going to be donated to Hard Rock Cafe in Toronto.
Very cool.
They're putting it into their memorabilia when we get back.
That's cool.
We're going to do a show. And it's crazy how we're still at that level. We're still... I'm happy we are.
That's
and
great.
I think if we can't do that, we should break up.
Yeah.
Because the Killer Dwarfs, that's what makes the band who we are.
Yeah.
If Russ wasn't doing a headstand or two, or if the show didn't have the comedy to it and the entertainment value, then we're not the Killer Dwarfs.
Well, I pray he doesn't break his neck over the next few
days. He's got it down, man. Like he really does. It's me.
Yeah, I saw the picture and I was he's still doing that?
For him, it's not as hard as you'd think. Like he has it down. He does.
That's wild stuff.
And I love it. I mean, I'm loving that we still can do that.
That's great.
You know? So
I know there's going to be a number of our listeners that are going to check y'all out on this tour, so I wanted to give them a little sneak preview. So,
okay, great.
Just excited I finally got to meet you in person.
Yeah, me too, man.
And,
really great to meet you.
Aaron wasn't able to make it, but he sends along his regards.
Yeah.
He's excited we got to get you guys in person. So
that's very cool, man.
So, yeah, thanks good luck on the tour.
Thanks a lot. All right. You can-
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.